I cut that thought off hard. I didn't want to think about her right now, how she had taken over my body and forced me to follow her commands instead of helping him. Together, Luis Cesar and I could have laid waste. Together, we could have cleared the fucking room. Instead, I saw my lip curl, showing fang. I wanted to put a fist through the mirror. I wanted to look at something else, I told myself harshly. Before you give her even more control, calm down. I didn't calm down, but I did look away and let my eyes roam over the bathroom, but that didn't seem to help. Couldn't think. Didn't know why I'd come in here. Until I bent over the sink to splash some water on my face and my ribs screamed at me. Oh, that was why. I peeled off the baggy sweatpants and T-shirt someone had put on me and checked out the damage. The slinky jumpsuit had provided zero protection, but Luis Cesar had drawn most of the fire and I'd been surrounded by troll. The worst I'd suffered was a bunch of weird round bruises peppering my stomach and thighs from the porcupine quill-like shrapnel thrown up by the destroyed floor. They were puffy and sore, with an angry red eye in the middle of each one. My ribs were also pissed off again. I was stiff as hell, and I felt uncharacteristically weak from the blood loss. But it could have been worse. It could have been a lot worse. I sat on the side of the tub and put my head in my hands. I felt like shit, but it wasn't physical. I'd fought in worse shape than this, way worse. But I'd never hurt like this. He's okay, I told myself. What is wrong with you? Get up, get dressed, get busy. You only have about 1,000 things to do. I didn't get up, and I already felt busy, like my head was sucking up all my strength, trying to sort out a mess that couldn't be sorted. I didn't have the skills set for this. I didn't even know where to start. My thoughts just went round and round until they made me dizzy, until they made me want to throw up. If we hadn't been attacked so ferociously and thereby held up, would Dorina have drowned a theater full of people? Would she have pressed that trigger if they'd still been inside? I didn't know. Like I didn't know how well she'd been following the fight. With her mind literally elsewhere, had she realized how much danger she had put us in? Did she care? Or was she confident that she could get me, and therefore herself, out of there and fuck everyone else? She had saved the Fae, people she didn't even know. But what about the people I knew? What about Olga and Ray and... If Luis Cesar was anyone else, he'd be dead right now. The thought intruded on my mental battle, loud and clanging, like a cymbal dropped on concrete. It made logical thought impossible, because every time I tried, there it was again, resonating. Over and over, louder and louder, that moment when he'd pushed me out of the way stuck on repeat in perfect clarity. I could see the brilliant crimson of his blood, brighter than the acres of curtains, could feel the warm stickiness hitting me in great bursts, could smell it in the air, partially vaporized by the force of the bullet, and rich with power he could no longer use. Shook again as I hit the floor of the box, sliding painfully into the hard wood of the side, unable to stop with his weight on top of me. Felt her throw him off and jerk the weapon out from under him, like it was nothing, like he didn't matter. Because to her, he didn't. I finally got up and took a shower. The water hurt the bruises, but it was a familiar burning ache, almost comforting. I knew how to bleed. I knew how to heal. But this? I didn't know how to do this. The hot water ran out before I was finished, because we only had about 1,000 people taking showers these days. I rinsed in cold, got out, dried off, and put on some clean sweats. I thought about combing out my hair, but it didn't seem important. Neither did the hunger clawing in my belly, the ever-present cost of Adamfear's metabolism. I felt it. I just didn't care. I wanted to call somebody, to report what I had seen, but Luis Cesar was already doing that. The only thing he didn't know was what Dorina had overheard in that underwater room, but that seemed really unlikely. The mage had told Curly that he was in charge, and it had sounded like he was talking about Geminis family. Only vampire families didn't work like that. Like, really didn't. Vampires thought of themselves as a breed apart, better, smarter, longer-lived, basically an evolved sort of human. Homo superior, I'd heard one say once, and he hadn't been joking. To take orders from a regular old garden-variety human, even a magical one, would be like, well, like your dog walking you. It just didn't happen. And then there was the fact that what I had heard, or thought I'd heard, had come from Dorina. She'd been riding that guard. She'd heard what was said, not me. So this was second-hand information, filtered through a wobbly link, and from a source I didn't entirely... God damn it! I had twisted wrong, picking up a dropped towel, and pain ripped through me. I stood there, panting by the sink for a moment, tamping down a desire to rip it out of the wall. Screw it. I couldn't do this right now. Like I couldn't heal if I didn't eat. I threw the damned towel in the bathtub and headed out the door, and almost tripped over some fey drinking coffee. I must have been in the bath longer than I'd thought, because Gessa and the boys had moved on. The fey were in their place, looking like they were taking a break from whatever fresh hell Claire had been putting them through, and eating their version of biscotti, with big mugs of steaming hot brew. Or at least they were until I showed up, when they abruptly scrambled to their feet. Okay, that was different. Because another thing the Fae didn't do was to give a shit about their Domfear housemate. They'd always treated me as something between a high-ranking servant, because I traded protection for rent, and a friend of Claire's, which meant that I was well below them in the household hierarchy, but also not theirs to order around. That had worked out, leaving us on a casual, vaguely friendly footing, with no obligations either way. Including whatever the heck this was. Good coffee? I finally asked, when the silence stretched a little more. You need more, one of them said, holding up his mug, which was the size of a soup bowl, and had another elbow him in the ribs. I thought you guys didn't like it.
We're trying to acclimatize ourselves to your strange earth foodstuffs, a second one said.
But he wasn't looking at me. He was looking at another tall, well-built blonde, a carbon copy of all the rest except for his expression. His expression was... well, shit. Is there a problem? I asked, because clearly... There was no answer. But the stare-down continued. Why, I didn't know. I'd spent the day sleeping. Pissing off somebody while unconscious was a new one even for me.
Radar,
a taller face said and put a hand on the angry one's arm, and had it immediately shrugged off. I looked between the two of them. Okay, what?
It's nothing,
Coffee Lover said. Seems kind of tense for nothing.
He's being ridiculous. Watch yourself.
Radar flushed, and his hand flexed, the one on the same side as his sword.
It's my right.
It's your neck,
Coffee Lover snapped.
The king likes this one.
Then he should have put her under his protection.
The tall fae, who was also a little bulkier and who hadn't liked having his hand shrugged off, smiled at him. It wasn't a particularly nice expression.
Maybe he doesn't think she needs it.
Angry Ass didn't like that, turning flashing eyes on his supposed ally.
You're only doing this because the king's away,
coffee lover accused.
"He's still away?" I asked.
"He remains at your Senate. He should be back soon."
He shifted his gaze to his buddy.
"Which is why you should wait until he returns."
"He's afraid he won't allow it,"
one of the others said.
"I told you."
"Won't allow what?" I asked, because I hadn't had my coffee yet, or eggs or toast or anything else, and was getting annoyed.
"Tell her,"
the tall one said.
"It's my right,"
Radar repeated, ignoring him, because I guess I didn't merit an explanation. His fellow Fae just looked at him, with expressions ranging from embarrassed to pissed off, like when the angry drunk guy who wants to fight everyone is your cousin. Only I didn't think this guy was drunk. I didn't know what he was and wondered if I cared.
"It is,"
he insisted. And the verdict was in. "Fuck this," I said, and headed for the stairs. And had a heavy hand grab my shoulder and spin me around, which was not the problem. The problem was that I was unarmed, and it was from behind, and that sort of thing wakes the beast. It happened in an instant, as it always did. Rage spiraling up out of nowhere, red haze descending, my heart threatening to beat out of my chest. But this time, it didn't come from her. This time it came from me. I felt her start to rise, the familiar, hateful rush, and something in me snapped. I'd spent most of my life containing my anger, trying to tamp it down, to beat it back. I'd spent years learning techniques to quiet the beast. But not this time. This time, for the first time, my rage matched her own. I saw again the puckered skin, the bloody wounds, the glittering pieces of shrapnel Luis Cesar was going to have to dig out of his healed flesh at some point, yet more pain. Like all the rest he had suffered for me, but because of her. She'd hamstrung me in battle, almost gotten him killed, like she'd taken over time and time again, blacking me out and using my body to do unspeakable things. Not this time. I threw everything I had at her. 500 years of pain and fear and hate, a storm of fury with all the raging wildness of a hurricane. And it felt good, God it did, to let go for once and let her know how it felt for a change. And it was a change, because instead of everything going black, the sunlit room merely darkened. Instead of gutting the Fae with the knife that my hand had decided on its own to pluck from his boot, I drove it into the floor. And instead of passing out and leaving my body in Dorina's hands, it felt like there were suddenly two captains on this ship, each fighting for control. And I wasn't finished yet. But the Fae almost was. He was trying to scramble away after my legs swept his out from under him and we followed him to the floor. But Dorina was faster, grabbing the still quivering knife out of the floorboards and shit! The knife was a blur even to my eyes, hitting down a dozen more times in a staccato beat as she ripped it out of the floor and drove it back in over and over, trying to bury it. That didn't work, and it was everything I could do to keep it out of the Fae's flesh, which wasn't helped by his twisting and turning and squealing when the latest strike sliced through his trousers in a particularly vulnerable area. It didn't slice through anything else, but it was close. I needed to get rid of the damned thing, now, and started struggling to throw it out the window. But all that did was screw up my vision, making it look like someone was flipping a switch on and off, while the damned Fae yelled and rolled around some more instead of taking the chance to... Finally! He had made it to his feet, but he didn't run. And then things got interesting. Darkness. She tripped him, grabbed his hair, used it like a handle to bare his throat. Light. I twisted the knife at the last second, slammed the hilt into his temple, tried to knock him out, hoping that would end this. Darkness. But he stayed conscious, and she latched on to the idea, jackhammering the thick wooden handle repeatedly into his face. Light. I shoved him away toward the wall and ran for the stairs. Darkness. She spun us around and lunged for him, catching him before the paneling did and then crashing his head through it. Light. So I threw him at the stairs, hoping he'd take the hint and run, goddammit. Instead, he snarled and whirled, face a bloody mess, but eyes flashing, and unsheathed a sword. Immediately, a wave of heightened rage flooded my body, tingled my fingertips, sapped my control, and sucked all the light out of the room in a split second, leaving me fumbling in the dark. But not unconscious. Not yet. But I was left trying to stop a fight by hearing alone, because she had my eyes now and she wasn't giving them back. And the idiot had a weapon, and if the Fae's reputation was anything to go by, he knew how to use it. And his buddies weren't interfering despite their earlier attitude. I didn't know why. I just knew... Fuck! I heard the Fae curse, my own voice snarl, and a sword go clattering. Felt my hand closing on a long, pale throat, a pulse beating rapidly in my palm as I squeezed. Felt it start to slow, weakening his attempts to free himself, which weren't working anyway because Dorina had a free hand. I could track his movements by her responses. Blow blocked, foot sweep denied and turned against him, his own momentum sending him to the floor again, half the job done right there. Gut punch arrested before it could land simply by grabbing his hand and pressing the bones until they crunched and he cried out. A barely there gasp for mercy he wouldn't get, and I couldn't help. Suddenly, I couldn't do anything. And that made it worse than all those other times. She was using my body to murder someone, and I was going to feel every second of it, a captive audience to savagery I couldn't control any more than I'd ever managed to control her. A useless appendage that couldn't do anything but rage. So I did. I hate you, I yelled, even knowing she didn't care. I've always hated you. You take every good and decent thing and you destroy it. You're the monster they always called us, not me, not me. And I hate... And just like that, the world fell away. Chapter 27 Mircha Venice, 1458. Mircha was racing the sun and losing. He'd gotten back late from his visit to Abramelin, but there had been no offer for him to stay at the Praetor's. He'd pointed out that he didn't need a safe room, one of the special retreats his kind used to ensure that stray sunbeams didn't set them alight while they slept. Anything would do, he'd assured her servants, even a closet. But the lady was abed by the time he returned, and none of her people gave a damn. Leaving him fleeing into darkness as death flirted with the horizon, and while his own body betrayed him, because this close to dawn, nothing worked right. Or at all, Mircha thought, clipping a wall at a dead run and taking half of the damned thing along with him. Dizzy and confused, he stumbled out of the cloud of dust and debris, only to stare around at a world gone mad. Buildings loomed inward, as if bending from their foundations to see this most curious of curious things, a vampire about to face the day. Shadows reached for him, cool islands of relief that beckoned him away from the streets, where the thinning night was starting to eat at his skin like acid. But they lied. The sun was coming, and the shadows would dissipate, leaving him to die screaming in their absence. He couldn't stop. But it was becoming harder and harder to find his footing, as his depth perception fled along with his power. Even worse, his mind was starting to suffer, leaving him looking at a city that no longer made sense. Bricks appeared to float up from under his feet, tripping him, and then sailed overhead as the street dissolved around him. The shutters of a nearby house detached from the wall and flew into space like a giant moth. Strange noises called out to him from passing houses, a sibilant whisper one moment, a deafening warning the next, making him jump and stagger and fall, and then lie there, gripping the bricks in confusion, not even sure which way was up anymore. All he knew was that he wasn't home, and he was out of time. The first notes of the Marangona rang out over the city. The hauntingly beautiful bell was named after the carpenters who started work at first light. It heralded the beginning of the workday, so dawn couldn't be that. It exploded behind him, all at once, releasing its terrible fire. The first beams began spreading across the city, brightening old bricks, picking out gilt decorations on palazzos, eating across pathways between buildings, including the one behind him. Mircea screamed and clawed at the street, stumbling back to his feet and into the shadow of a building away from the terrible light. But it wouldn't help for long, and he didn't know what to do. The bells were deafening. The shadows were fleeing in front of him. The city was falling into fire, and there was nothing, nothing to save him. Until someone took his hand. "This way." The voice was a dark whisper in his mind. Mircea didn't know anything, barely even knew his name at that point, but he recognized that voice, soft yet strong, and calm, so calm, as if there was nothing to fear and the world wasn't falling apart. "Come." A tug on his hand, and it was constant, too, even though it felt like his skin was sloughing off. He followed along behind, blind now, as the approaching day stole his sight along with everything else. "No, this way. Hurry." He changed his course, following the voice. His feet stumbled, and he almost went down again, because how could you walk on a street that was dissipating like smoke? But the voice beckoned him on, and the hand steadied him, and he staggered onward into nothingness. Until...
"You found him."
A new voice.
"Yes, but he's hurt." "Of course he's hurt. It's almost day."
Someone grabbed his shoulders and shook him.
"What the hell were you thinking?"
Mircea didn't answer. He wasn't sure that the new voice was talking to him. He wasn't sure of anything. And then the pain became agony, as if he'd been dunked in a vat of acid.
"Run,"
the first voice told him urgently.
"We have to run."
He ran. The city raged around him, crashes and lightning bolts, and thunder like the feet of 1,000 horses, like a battle, one he was losing because his skin was fire, his eyes were flame, the moisture in his mouth dried up and flew away, so that his next scream was silent, the desiccated remains of his throat unable to form words or even sounds anymore, just endless silent screams.
"Shut it! Shut it!"
Someone else was screaming now. Something slammed behind him and something was thrown over him, a heavy, enveloping weight.
"Up to his room. It's still too light in here,"
the first voice said.
"Do you mind if I put out the flames first?"
the second irascible voice asked, and Mircea suddenly felt himself being pummeled. Something was burning. He vaguely realized that it was him. And then he was being shoved at what felt like a set of stairs when he fell into them, and pushed and heaved and dragged upward, because his limbs didn't seem to be taking his commands anymore. But somehow he reached the top and was pushed forward again, and then... God! Blessed soft darkness! Cool, cool air! Pain! So much, so hot, but lessening, drifting away... like his consciousness. He tried to hold on to what was left of it, tried to get his eyes to work so that he could see that he was safe. But the darkness had him and closed relentlessly over his head. And he was gone.
"Daft!"
Horatiu's hand slapped the back of his head again, hard.
"Are you trying to beat my brains out?"
Mircea huddled over the little table in what passed for a kitchen. It was a small room on the ground floor of their house, one that stuck out over the sea that raged against the rocks below like a demon. Or maybe that was just his mood.
"Someone ought to, as they're clearly defective,"
the old man snapped, and ripped off another piece of Mircea's hide. Mircea bit back a scream, because it wasn't manly. and because his throat felt as raw as his back, which Horatiu was relieving of a wealth of ruined skin. The stuff had to come off. The charred reminder of yesterday's activities was clinging in places to the new growth, trying to come in, and keeping Mircea from healing. But the old man didn't have to be quite so enthusiastic about it.
"Like a damned snake,"
Horatiu muttered, throwing the latest piece into a bucket. Mircea tried not to look at it, or at the clothing that had literally melted to said flesh and was being removed along with it. He stared at his arm instead, the one cradling his throbbing head. It was pale and whole and perfect, having already been dealt with. Only a few reddened patches where the outer flesh had been stubborn and ripped some of the new away with it gave witness to how close he had come. So very close. If Horatiu hadn't...
"Oh! That's the last of them,"
Horatiu said, having just stripped the ruined flesh off the rest of Mircea's back. He slapped the newly revealed skin.
"Get up and drop your breeches." "I can't drop them. They're melted to my legs." "Don't take that tone with me,"
Horatiu said, and pushed him up against the wall. Mircea had a response on his lips, but it died at the sight of the knife the old man was wielding, like a butcher coming after a fat young calf. A half-blind butcher, because Horatiu's eyes were getting worse every year.
"I'll do it myself,"
he said, alarmed, and Horatiu thrust it into his hands.
"See that ye do,"
he sniped, and took the flesh bucket out the back and tossed it into the sea.
"You didn't have to throw in the bucket, too,"
Mircea said, watching him.
"As if I could ever use it for anything else,"
the old man said, and slammed back inside. No, Mircea supposed not. But they weren't finished, and now they had no bucket. He decided not to mention that. Horatiu was more incensed than Mircea had ever seen him, and not without cause. He and Orina had spent the hour before dawn scouring the streets for him, and only found him at the last possible moment. If they'd been even a little later. Mircea cut off that train of thought and swallowed, tasting ash. He felt nauseous and really unwell, but thought it unwise to mention it. Horatiu stomped into the main part of the house, on some errand Mircea didn't question, perhaps to give him some privacy, which was appreciated, since the burnt flesh on the lower part of his body came off like a pair of hosen in one excruciating piece. Mircea lay on the floor afterward, naked and uncaring, panting at the ceiling. He was bleeding from a few dozen new wounds, and probably looked like a plague victim. He felt like one, too, although he would live. By late tonight or tomorrow, the reddened flesh would be pale and perfect again. The broken rasp, which was all the fire had left of his voice, a mellow tenor, and his stiff and reluctant muscles smooth and strong. It was the one thing you could be sure of as a vampire. What didn't kill you would leave you exactly as you were, with no scars or other reminders of how close you had come. Not that Mircea needed them. That experience had been seared into his memory, possibly literally.
"Are ye done yet?"
Horatiu's voice demanded from outside. Mircea sat up, feeling dizzy.
"Yes, I..."
A pair of hosen hit him in the face, cutting off the comment. They were followed by a shirt, a belt, and a hat.
"What is this?"
Mircea asked, looking at the latter.
"A hat,"
Horatiu told him sweetly.
"Ye wear it on your head." "I know what it is. Why do I need it?"
Horatiu didn't answer. He just left again, while Mircea struggled into the huge old camisa his servant had provided, which was threadbare and patched, and so voluminous that he'd taken to wearing it as a nightshirt, since it drooped well past his knees. Even the soft, weathered weave stung his skin in places,
but nowhere near what tight hosen or a fitted doublet would have done. Here. Something was shoved under his nose, while Mircea was still trying to figure out if he dared to put on anything else. He was leaning toward no, and that was before he realized that the thing Horatiu was holding wasn't the drink he could have really used right now. Instead, it looked like one of the allegorical warnings against sin that pious pilgrims to the city were always snatching up after visiting the brothels and before stopping by the taverns to drink themselves insensate. Only, hellish painted monsters didn't blink. Mircea took the little mirror and examined his face. Half of it was more or less normal, the side turned away from the sun, he assumed. But the rest? Mircea swallowed again, taking in the naked skull bubbling with blisters, the reddened, peeling skin of his jaw, and the liquid pus oozing out of a corner of one eye, which was so swollen and puffy that he was surprised he could see at all, and frankly wished he couldn't.
"It'll heal," he croaked,
and ignored the expletive that sentiment won him. He turned back to the table, his eye over a bowl, trying to force out as much pus as possible. Horatiu muttered something just outside Mircea's damaged hearing as he cleaned up the latest mess. When he was finished, he pulled out a chair and sat down with an audible sigh. "All right," he said after a moment. "All right."
"All right what?"
Mircea asked, feeling pained and put upon and grateful and irritated all at the same time. He appreciated all his servant did for him. He truly did. And he didn't blame the man for looking disgusted. Mircea had felt his own lip curl at that brief glimpse of the creature in the mirror. So how could he blame Horatiu for a similar expression? But in that case, why didn't the man leave him alone? Go look at something more attractive and leave Mircea to what passed for his ablutions.
"We have to talk,"
Horatiu said ominously, and Mircea sighed. Oh, that was why.
"About?"
"About?" Horatiu looked like he was about to smack him again. "What do you think? Ye almost killed your damned self. I hope it was worth it."
"It was."
Mircea gave up on the eye and sat back against the wall, feeling about as good as he looked. Horatiu got up again, fetching them both flagons of ale and tossing out the little bowl. Guess that was another thing that couldn't be saved. Fortunately, that wasn't the case with other things.
"I have it,"
Mircea said, as a tankard was put in front of him.
"Have what? What have I been looking for? The solution. That's what she said about the blessed kerchief of the many gold pieces,"
Horatiu muttered and drank ale.
"That was from a shyster."
"And this isn't?"
"No."
Mircea drank, to wash the feel of burnt flesh out of his mouth.
"No."
"And how do ye know that?"
Mircea told him. It took a while, and at the end Horatiu was staring at him in consternation. Or maybe that was the wonky eye. He couldn't see out of it worth a damn.
"Are ye mad, boy?"
Or maybe not. Mircea frowned.
"I thought you'd be pleased."
"Pleased? You're talking about killing her."
"Killing."
Mircea paused because he obviously hadn't explained well enough.
"No, just the disease. Vampirism is..."
"What you are."
"What I have,"
Mircea corrected sharply.
"A magical disease that I passed on to Dorina, and which is killing her. You know this."
"What I know is that you're not taking her to some lunatic in the damn desert."
"I will do what I must."
"And letting him carve her up."
"He isn't. Will you listen?"
Mircea grabbed the old man's wrist because he had jumped to his feet,
as if he planned to spirit Dorina away while Mircha was too weak to stop him.
"He isn't going to carve up anything. He's going to cast a spell that divides her mind, walling off the vampire-based insanity and allowing her to live a normal life. Isn't that what we've wanted?"
"No, that's what ye've wanted. Ye hate what ye are, even now, after all this time. Ye can't accept it. Blame it for costing you."
"Careful."
They didn't talk about his deceased wife. They just didn't. Except for tonight, apparently.
"Why careful?"
Horatiu demanded harshly.
"Elena's dead because of that damned murderous bastard of a brother of yours. Not for anything ye could have—"
"She's dead because I left her. Alone and unprotected. Just like I left Dorina."
"Ye didn't even know she existed."
"And that makes it better."
Mircha got up, despite the fact that there was no room to pace in their closet of a kitchen, or in the rest of the shack he called home these days. A dainty old lady dipping her toes in the surf, the man who sold it to him had said, when the reality was that it was a roof and little else, one that looked like it could collapse into the sea at any moment. He should be glad to have it, nonetheless. Plenty had less. But he resented it, like he resented having to fawn and crawl to the praetor, to the wealthy so-called healers who had yet to heal a damned thing, to the whole world. When he was alive, he'd led armies in suits of armor that cost more than this house, possibly more than the whole street. He'd returned to palatial dwellings, servants, the finest of food. And gold, so much that he'd become careless with it, and had to be chastised by his father, because too much liberality could be viewed as a sign of weakness. He didn't miss the money, most of the time, or the trappings and finery. He didn't mind living in poverty, in mended clothes and patched shoes, in a city where ostentatious wealth was the only birthright anyone cared about. He didn't even mind the contemptuous glances. All right, that was a lie. They burned almost as hot as the sun, but he could deal with them. He couldn't deal with this. Watching his daughter die, eaten alive by the curse that had already stolen his life, his wife, everything he cared about, and was now determined to deprive him of the last thing of value he had left. It wouldn't succeed. Not this time.
"I can't kill it,"
he told Horatiu.
"It's part of her now. But I can trap it, imprison it, wall it away. This mage said he's done it before, but it takes a fantastic amount of power, more than he possesses or I can afford."
"Then this is over."
"Like hell it's over."
Mircha rounded on the old man.
"He doesn't have the power now, but I'm willing to get it for him. And when I do, the vampire part of Dorina will never be a problem again." "The vampire part."
Horatiu's roomy eyes met his, and there was fire in them.
"Do you hear yourself? Has this latest charlatan rattled your brain, or did the sun cook it?"
"Have a care."
"I am. I do. And the sense that has somehow left you."
The old man gripped his arms, and Mircha allowed it, despite the pain. Because Horatiu looked pained, too. And worried, more than Mircha thought he'd ever seen before.
"She's your daughter. Oliver. I, the vampire part, too. How do you think we found you tonight? Do ye think a human could attract you in time? Through the maze of streets around here?"
"She is human."
Mircha pulled away, furious that Horatiu couldn't understand.
"She has abilities, yes, because of the disease, just as I do. But it's killing her."
"And this mage won't? Men like him prey on the desperate, telling ye what ye want to hear, to gain what they want in return. He's fed you a story. He's also the first decent chance we've had. The first to hold out any real hope. Aye, that's how they get you. They're purveyors of hope, of dreams, and nothing else.
And how would you know?
How would you? Because he told you?
No, because she did.
Mircea looked up, in the direction of the room where his daughter slept.
Dorina followed me tonight, to the praetor's. Not in body,
he added, because Urachu was looking alarmed.
Mentally. You've a right about her gifts.
Mentally?
The old man's eyes narrowed.
What does that mean?
I'm not sure. But she was there. And when I asked her how she managed it, how she could do anything after what she went through last night, do you know what she said?
I'm going to find out,
Urachu muttered, also looking at the ceiling. This time it was Mircea who took him by the arms.
She said, it's only bad when we're both awake at the same time. She knows, Urachu. She knows there's two of her, a light and a dark. The girl she should have been, and the monster I made of her. A monster I'm going to shut away forever.
Chapter 28. The vision, or whatever it was, snapped, leaving me staring at Claire's hallway. And visibly shaking and feeling like screaming, I wasn't sure why. I suddenly had so many reasons to choose from. The Fae weren't looking much better. Two of them had naked swords in their hands, but were being held back by Tall Guy. Coffee Lover was plastered to the wall, one hand on his sword hilt and the other clutching his mug, most of the contents of which were sloshed down his front. The final Fae was on the ground underneath me, his face red with gore and broken blood vessels, his expression as shell-shocked as I felt.
Because that? What the hell was that?
Nobody spoke. Sunlight was streaming through the octagonal window, the beams lighting up the dust in the air and putting an ironic halo around the head of Angry Ass. The Fae weapons were sliding back into their sheaths, courtesy of a terse gesture from Tall Guy, who must have noticed the change in my expression. Because Dorina's rage, or mine, or a combination of both, was simply gone. It looked like time had rewound, and I'd just come out of my room, except that I was sitting on a Fae. I sat there some more. Dorina, I thought blankly, but didn't get anything back. One of the Fae cleared his throat. It wasn't the guy on the floor whose eyes were starting to pop, I realized. I slowly pulled my fingers out of his flesh, and a sigh rippled around the hall, along with a fervent sentence from Coffee Lover in a language I didn't know. I also didn't care. Dorina? I said again, my eyes flicking around, as if I was waiting for her to materialize out of thin air. Nothing. Dorina! I waited, my heart about to beat out of my chest, my breath coming heavily as it hadn't during the fight. More nothing. She wasn't going to talk to me. And there was a reason for that, wasn't there? I didn't tell Mircea to do that, I yelled. It wasn't my fault. The silence was deafening and accusing. But I couldn't defend myself if she wouldn't, damn it, talk to me! A sudden surge of emotion tore through me. Anger, fear, longing, sadness. I didn't know what it was or why it was there. I just knew I was tearing up, which made me even more frantic because there was nowhere for the emotion to go. She wasn't here. But she had been here just a minute ago, and now she was gone because what? There was nothing left to talk about? Dorina, I said, and even to me it sounded sad and broken and weak.
No wonder she didn't want to talk to me. Someone cleared his throat.
It is Dory. Yes?
I looked up at tall guy, half blind with tears I didn't understand. He was staring at me along with everyone else, but instead of looking angry or shocked like the rest, his face was almost gentle. It confused me.
Are you unwell?
He asked after a moment. I don't know. He crouched down beside me, and I realized that I was still straddling his guy. Should probably do something about that, as soon as I made sure that he wasn't going to attack me again, and figured out why he had in the first place. I poked him in the chest. What's your deal again? He didn't say anything. His face was still too red, his eyes too prominent, and his stare too distant. He looked like he was reevaluating his life choices. Tall guy didn't have that problem, and after a moment he answered.
There is a series of heroic deeds among our people,
he told me.
Or challenges might be a better word. 9 in all that, if performed before witnesses, grant...
He frowned.
There is no equivalent in English. One is remembered in song and legend thereafter, counted among the bravest of the brave, and greatly admired by one's fellow warriors.
And that has what to do with me?
One of the 9 is to defeat a Vargr in battle, he admitted.
Great. Well, I'm not one, so jumping me before I have breakfast won't bring you any renown. I told Angry Ass, and climbed off him. He flushed some more. I guess at the implication that he had tried to take me down when I was at less than my best. But he didn't say anything. Maybe because I still had his knife. Dorina had shoved it into my, our, pocket. Why, I had no idea. To make the point that she didn't need it to kill him? To keep as a souvenir? To leave me a message? A spot of blood had run off the blade and stained my sweats. It wasn't much, and it wasn't mine, but it showed that despite my best efforts, she'd gotten a blade in him. I swallowed, feeling sick.
"What do you mean you're not Vargr?"
Coffee Lover asked.
"The king said..."
"The king doesn't know everything," I rasped. There was stunned silence like I'd blasphemed in church. "The king doesn't know everything about me," I rephrased, shaking my head to clear it. Tall guy looked confused. He had a long, somewhat homely face for a fae, with a slightly bulbous tip to the nose, and eyes that were too small and too close together. It made him look like a puzzled greyhound. I decided I needed a name for him. I didn't usually bother, since I couldn't tell them apart anyway, but he seemed to be in charge. Or maybe just older. He had that seen-it-all-didn't-think-much-of-it world weariness of an old soldier. He was also something approaching 8 feet tall, putting him almost a foot above the rest of the fae, including Cademan. So I thought I'd remember. "You have a name?" I asked, expecting the usual speech I got from the fae before I had learned not to ask that question. They tended to rattle off all the nicknames they'd won over the years. I suppose as a way of telling you something about themselves, but it was annoying. Except for this time, when I got exactly 2 syllables.
"Ulfin."
"Okay, Ulfin. I'm having kind of a problem lately. Call it a split personality. Call it whatever you want. Just don't fuck with it, okay? 'Cause I'm not always the one in charge." The confusion didn't go away, but he didn't ask any stupid questions.
"All right."
I handed him back his guy's knife, because the fae are weird about their weapons, and I didn't need any more trouble. see what I can do about the coffee, I said, and went downstairs. Mircea wasn't answering his phone. He was probably at the consoles where the wards played hell with modern tech. I knew that. It didn't keep me from wanting to punch through the wall, however. I was on the front porch because I needed some air and it was getting harder to find any place to be alone around here. I had called Mircea because I didn't know who else to call, but I didn't need him. I needed his daughter, and she wasn't reachable by phone, or any other way I knew. And honestly, I couldn't blame her. I didn't even know why I wanted her to talk to me so badly, because what was I going to say? Yell again that it wasn't my fault? I didn't see that helping. Especially since it kind of was. I flashed back to a half-remembered dream, one of the ones she'd shown me because I didn't recall the years we'd spent in Venice at all. Mircea hadn't been sure that this barrier of his would hold. Dorina's mental gifts threatened it, and he'd been afraid that if I started to get curious too, it might undermine the whole thing. So he had made sure I never would by erasing my memories of the place. All of them. For centuries, I'd had gaping holes in my past filled with absolutely nothing, which I'd put down to the crazy, but which were actually things Mircea had thought might trigger my curiosity. I hadn't remembered Horatiu, the kindly old man who had apparently been important to me, other than as a servant of Mircea's. I hadn't recalled the quirky house on the ocean, where I'd spent much of my childhood. And I definitely hadn't remembered my child body twisting in agony as Dorina raged inside her little human cage. Because how was she supposed to develop properly like that? I didn't know how she had developed at all. Vampires didn't, not even those taken as children, which was why it was forbidden to change one so young. But it had happened in the past, when the rules weren't as well enforced. And what had been the result? Nothing. A child vamp was a child vamp. He got stronger with age and feeding, but never matured, because his growth had been arrested at the moment he was changed, leaving him as limited in understanding as he'd ever been, no matter how many years of experience he gained, because his brain just stayed the same. Which had caused some seriously messed up masters on occasion, with all the petulance, two-dimensional thinking, and tantrums of a child, in a body capable of leveling a small city. I didn't think that was true of Dorina. The bits I remembered from her memories had seemed adult enough, but I didn't know. Like, I didn't know what happened to a vampire's brain when it did evolve, when it was forced to change and grow, because the eternally static body it was in wasn't so static. When something meant to be forever the same was ripped apart, over and over again, as the human child it had been welded to in the womb decided to have another growth spurt. No wonder most Domfiers died in childhood, and the rest went mad, or were walled away in a tiny section of my mind, only able to emerge when I was asleep, or when my mental grip was compromised through shock, anger, or fear. God! No wonder she hated me. And once done, the separation had been permanent. Her mental powers had been growing right alongside Mircea's, because a few decades' difference in age is no time at all in vampire terms. He had told me once that he'd been afraid of lowering the barrier, because once it was down, he might never be able to raise it again. At the time, it had sounded like the truth. Maybe it even was. Or maybe it was a convenient excuse, a small voice said. I shifted uneasily. So instead of a life with occasional wild episodes, Dorina had had only a fraction of one, and had lived it with the knowledge that Mircea, the father she had loved, the father she'd rescued, didn't feel the same way. because Horatiu had been right. It hadn't been me that night scouring the streets for him. Mircea had been saved by someone who spoke to him mentally, something I still had trouble with. So it had been Dorina. And since she'd also been the one to send me memories of that talk in the kitchen, she must have been listening. Or maybe riding along again, which made it worse. If someone said something hurtful, you could try to pass it off as they're having a bad day and lashing out. Could convince yourself that they didn't really mean it. But if you were in their head at the time? She'd known he was serious, that he thought of her as a monster. Or worse than that, he thought of her as a disease. The same one that had stolen everything from him, from his life to his position to his wife, and was now killing the only thing he had left. Like he had wanted to kill her. I swallowed and put my arms around myself, because what the fuck did that do to you? Growing up knowing your only parent didn't just hate you, but wanted you dead. And that, since he couldn't kill you without killing the daughter he did want, he was determined to lock you away. Forever. I felt the old ball of anger and distrust for him well up, the one I had carried for so long that it felt normal, natural. Mircea had separated from me after I reached adulthood, and the memory wipe that followed had made certain that I thought of him as a cold, distant master vamp, ashamed of the nasty d'enfer he'd sired, and who seemed to show up only when he wanted something. He had told me recently that he'd been concerned that his growing status would put a spotlight on me, a dangerous prospect, since the deal he'd made with the Senate to overlook my existence was nullified once I grew up, and because he himself might serve as a trigger to all those repressed memories. Maybe it was even true. But it had left us most definitely at odds, to the point that this recent spate of familial closeness felt strange. Nice in some ways, but strange nonetheless. My default was hating him, or at least seriously suspecting him. I hadn't known what to do with the other feelings that had been bubbling up lately. Like I didn't know what to do with this. I sat there on the steps, the sun on my face, but my thoughts dark. He had condemned Dorina and me to a half-life. What else was he supposed to do? What would I have done in his place? Kept looking for another solution while the fits tore my kid apart, fits I would stop with knowledge I already had? It reminded me of those parents with a troubled pregnancy, the ones forced to select one child to die so that the other might live. Lose one or lose them both. A horrible choice. But how much worse was it when the one selected out knew it? When she was aware that she'd been made into a sacrifice, that her life had been deemed less important, her wishes discounted, her hopes, dreams, and ambitions stifled, so that her far less talented sister might thrive. What the hell happened then? The phone rang. I put it to my ear automatically, not even checking first. And of course, it was Mircea.
Dorina.
Wrong number, I thought, half hysterically, and didn't say anything.
Dorina.
His voice was as mellifluous as always. He could do wonders with that voice. Could charm emperors and kings with that voice. Could persuade master vampires into agreements they didn't want at all, which was a lot harder than talking to kings.
Dorina.
It was becoming more insistent. Sorry, butt dial, I whispered and hung up. I sat there some more. I felt dizzy, in limbo, uncharacteristically numb. I didn't know what to do. Not that it was up to me or to Mircea either. For the first time, the ball was in Dorina's court. She could do what she wanted, and I couldn't blame her for whatever she chose, like I couldn't blame her any more for the life we had lived, or the life I'd lived, I corrected, which suddenly seemed like paradise in comparison. So now what? The thought